Welcome back to the Focus on Linux podcast episode 111. I'm Christian and with me today is Enrico.
Hey, hey.
And today we have a very special topic. So as our listeners already might guess, it's again about Foreman. And we are now speaking English instead of German, which means that we might have a very special guest today, which is Ohad Levy. Hi, Ohad.
Hello.
So nice to hear you. And we are recording on the 9th of July, 2024, and we want to talk about the early days of the Foreman project. So why don't you go ahead, Ohad, and tell our listeners who you are and what are you up these days?
Okay, so hi, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here. All right, so I'm Ohad. Approximately 15 years ago, I think the first commit of Foreman was done. If I'm not mistaken, we're really on the date, right? Which is thank you for celebrating, right? I mean, the 15-year-old birthday. If you look at the commit itself, you could see the time zone. I don't know if many people actually follow that, but it's GMT plus 8, which is, I happen to be living in Singapore at that point in time. It was, I think, an evening after work, and I decided that I'm starting Foreman. And just for context, what predates it, maybe a small short story. So I've been in the, back then, I've been in the IT space for, you know, probably a solid 10 years. I've been installing servers and managing, and the company that I worked for basically had lots of data centers distributed around the world. And in essence, it's a chip design company, and therefore we have lots of compute, and sadly, storage was not always next to the where compute was available. So we had data centers, but we couldn't really use them efficiently across, right? You had to move a lot of data, and then, you know, the environment is different. And so back then, it was like even predates clouds. So how do we get into a consistent, standardized environment where everything could be, you know, for the end user, everything just works, right? So I started an unification project back then. I think that's how we called it, of various data centers. Turns out it was a complex problem. So the obvious things were, okay, how do I align configuration management, right? How do we get all the systems to be on a similar path? Maybe they don't have the same version because they have different downtimes, but generally speaking, how do we get it on the same branch, right? And maybe a different version on, across the same branch. Turns out the systems were installed differently, right? So what, in, depending on who installed and how it was installed, you get different outcomes. So the first step in that journey was, oh, let's figure out configuration management. You know, back in the days, there were not a lot of options.
We already got rid of CFEngine, probably, right?
Yeah.
Well, we actually looked into CFEngine.
Really?
Yes.
Was it still a topic back then?
Well, it was one of the ways to solve this problem. Yeah. And it was used. And the thing that I had issues with CFEngine is the lack of consistency. So you would run it, and maybe the fifth time you run it, you'll get the result you wanted. But technically, how do you know if you got the right result? So,
yeah.
And then I don't remember exactly how I found it, but then Puppet was released, or the initial, you know, look released the first, yeah, zero point something version of Puppet, really, really early days. And I started playing with it, and I, oh my God, there's something to it. It's useful. I can write code, and I could, you know, even before modules back then in the days of Puppet, but then it grew into modules, so that like packages of things that can be redistributed. And I said, okay, awesome. This Puppet seems to be working. And you know, it was very early days of the Puppet community. So a lot of people, I think, started to look into it. And also the early days of cloud. So, you know, a lot of people that started deploying in AWS saw a really good combination of AWS and Puppet. And I had these, I don't know how many dozen of large data centers. And okay, how do I solve this problem? So I started with a Kickstart generator, you know, for RHEL machines or RHEL-like machines. You know, some templating, some things to orchestrate the launch of Puppet. And we deployed that across the data centers. Took the time, you know, because it wouldn't really work. You have DHCP that needs to be configured. You had all kinds of dependencies of other stuff, right? So I had to, and maybe this is where, you know, I'll just mention the Paul Kelly, who was kind of a partner in crime for at least the beginning, where he ended up writing like, oh, we had Windows infrastructure, right? Microsoft infrastructure back then. So for DHCP and things like that. So, okay, how do we make an API to connect to those things, right? So we had a Windows server and some code on the Windows server that could, I think DNS command, or I don't remember how it was implemented back then, but basically something that help us automatically configure whatever infrastructure required to get this provisioning going. At some point in time, as I was starting to be more fascinated by open source, right? So I've been an open source user for many years, but I never really felt like I can contribute. Like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Linux, oh, I'll download Linux. It's amazing, I'm using Linux. And then I'm using whatever, GIMP or Firefox or whatever. These are projects that are, you know, above me, right? I'm like, I have nothing to contribute in this scope, right? So anyway, with that, I felt like, okay, we're building some solution that might be reused. And one of the first things I went to my manager and I basically said, well, it looks like we're building something that has some potential to be useful for others. What do you think about open sourcing it? Or, you know, as a German company and it was, I don't know, a gray area maybe back then, right? Not many, lots of open source. And you know, it took a long time to get to a conclusion. So I'll ask our lawyers, I'll ask someone, you know, legal. And long story short, at some point in time, I didn't get the answers I wanted, right? And it was something that I was, you know, being fascinated by and growing passion towards, because I actually felt like, oh, I think I have something to contribute. I really want to contribute. And so the thing that was that Kickstart generator, and it had some other features that are specific to integration to, you know, systems we had in my company back then. That was the Project Genie, right? That was referred in our keynotes before. But generally speaking, Genie never saw the light of open source, right? And just to kind of maybe 2 points. First of all, I think Genie kept on going for a few years until that company ended up switching back to Forman, because it was amazing, you know. Maybe, I mean, we are here, so we know that Forman has been successful in terms of community and adoption and feedback and growing, you know, in capabilities. But just kind of to close, and this is something that I always found funny. Eventually, my manager's feedback back then was, we can't commit to open sourcing it because we don't want to have any legal liability. Hmm. And the example he gave me, and I don't remember exactly why that was that example, but maybe something happened in that context. But it was, what if it gets used in the space station and something breaks because of it, right?
They don't want to be liable. They don't want to answer those questions. So, it's something that you also nowadays have with open source. Many companies are struggling.
And when we closed that loop, I think was a Puppet Conf in 2012 or you know, somewhere, one of the keynote speakers was SpaceX. And they were like, you know, demonstrating their usage of Forman. I said, nail it. So just to close that loop was a good point or a funny moment for me.
Great. And it's a little bit shocking, I think, that we still have these kinds of questions nowadays. So a lot of companies also are doing great products and they do not want to share their code because they're afraid of liability, and maybe one of my competitors is going to grab that code and do the better project and will buy me out.
Well, I think you need to differentiate between your secret sauce as a company, between to something that you do, you'll do it anyway, and why not do the right thing along the way. Having said that, I really went into open source blindly. You know, I jumped into it without really knowing how deep. Today, I have much more understanding of open source licenses. I know the responsibility and toll maintaining a project is, right? So it's not something that you could, I'll just do it on the side and still feel like, you know, this is something that is, in full transparency, I'm not, you know, not 100% I'll jump on a next project tomorrow. It comes with a lot of responsibilities, to be honest. So I was young, I did it, I just jumped and I was happy. I had really great time. But if you're just a company who wants to be successful, open sourcing and doing what's right for the community, doing what's right for making it successful by its own, sometimes will conflict with the, you know, what's right for your company potentially. So I can see that as being a question mark.
So at which point, I mean, you started as an open source project. So that was probably you with a couple of others fascinated about the thing and willing to work on it somehow. Was there some point where this became like a company, or was it directly like you were in the community, Red Hat was reaching out and said, we kind of need that?
So the story there, so for in full transparency, I work for Red Hat today, and I worked for Red Hat for the last 14 years. It's nearly the whole time since I started Foreman. So the connection to Red Hat actually happened. So in 2009, again, when Foreman was pretty young, I went to the first Puppet Camp. Mm-hmm. Back then it was Puppet Camp. Not cons, I think it changed. So I was in San Francisco, and you know, it was just 60 people or something. It was really, really early days. Obviously, those conferences grew a lot later on. And this is where I presented what we did with Puppet using Genie. That was the talk that was accepted, basically, right? How enterprise deployment of large scale, multi-data center, and so on with Puppet. And then we had, if you remember back then, it was kind of popular to have unconference, so people could vote on topics. And I suggested to talk about Foreman, which is, I was probably a couple of months old at that point in time. And share about the project that I had. So turns out a lot of people wanted to hear about it. And I ended up talking basically it's been years by now, but I think it was like a one-day event. And out of the, let's say, 6 hours of the event, I ended up talking between 2 to 3 hours. Doing my original talk and then doing my Foreman talk and then staying lots of hours to do Q&A with the folks. So one of the folks in that audience was a Red Hatter. And, you know, we kind of stay in touch. And then I think a couple of months later, basically, hey, we're doing this system management stuff. Are you interested? And I was not really like thinking of selling Foreman or doing anything like that commercially. It was like my hobby. It was my, where I spend most of my fun time. And honestly, I lived in Singapore at that time. And before that, I spent a few years in Austria. So my wife and I, we had our first daughter. So it was like, okay, I think we're ready also to go back home. So it kind of worked out well in that context that we just relocated back to Israel. And Red Hat was kind of, you know, willing to help with that because Red Hat bought a startup, small startup in Israel that created KVM. And they were looking for people that know open source. So, you know, can we kind of, you know, how about you move there and help us and work together? Yeah. And so
that was kind of a win-win.
Yeah. So it took a while until Foreman became, so the relationship I had with my manager was, I'm going to do open source when I have time, right? You know, I'm an engineer, right? So I'm getting like tasks and developing and so on. And if I have time, if I have free time, you know, you could do open source stuff. Sure, why not? You know, it's Red Hat. We encourage people to do their open source projects. And, you know, there's a lot of trust that people can find the right balance. And so I kept working on Foreman. And I worked during some of the hours during the day and worked many hours during my free time. And I really remember leaving it, dreaming about it, waking up in the middle of the night because I had a toddler, and you know, while you wait until she falls asleep again, looking about all the issues, the folks in, you know, US issues they had, and you know, back then it was IRC, so whatever, what are the new chats, what people wrote, what are the new problems, so I can get organized to think, how do I solve them tomorrow? That was really fun and exciting. Because it really felt like you get a direct connection to the problems and you can really offer solutions very quickly and everyone's happy. Yeah. I'm definitely happy that people using it felt like they're getting first level support kind of,
I mean, that was the best experience that I had back in the days with the tools around that. I mean, there was Spacewalk, but Spacewalk was not really aware of config management. It was Red Hat working together with SUSE on systems management, and that solved installing, but like config management became a thing, virtualization became a thing back in the days. I remember like the introduction of virtualization in the company that I was working in at 2007, 2008, something around that. And with that, the number of machines that we had to manage increased dramatically. So there had to be something that solves that. And back in that days, I was also figuring out how could I solve this problem of installation and also like config management. And Foreman was really like a project where you could feel that people like to work on it. And I never had a project where you just hit up an IRC and have your solution up in, I don't know, 20 minutes or something, just ping something there and there's someone just taking over. I mean, usually you have to collect logs and stuff like that, so it has to be a good question so that you can get an answer. But it was really responsive, and the community that you guys built up there was really responsive, and that's what made me like this tool so much. Yeah.
So I think the key ingredient in all of it is everyone had fun. I mean, people enjoyed it and people felt like they're contributing. I think
definitely
feeling that you're helping, and, you know, from obviously code contribution, but really to making other people succeed, to improving the documentation, to thinking about new options and new ways or new, you know, I think there is still a great community. Sadly, not as attached as I was 15 years ago, but or even 10. But I think the community is the key ingredient. And in order to have an effective community, people need to be passionate and need to personally enjoy doing what they're doing.
Definitely. I mean, there's a great website for this. So it's communitytheforeman.org, and it's running Discourse, which is a great open source project for running communities. And we are also, or at least I'm also part of the community, and I attend conferences and meet people that are working on this project. And I think that's a quite interesting way Foreman has come through in the last 15 years. And I think you must be really proud of the thing that you started 15 years ago, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm very proud. I think it's one of the major achievements, in my professional career. I don't know how many years can I claim the credit for it, right? I mean, time. But definitely something I'm very proud of. And looking back, in course of many years, we don't get many opportunities like that to really have an impact on so many people and even companies at the end, right? So we didn't close the loop on Red Hat, just to come back to how Red Hat and eventually also other companies made this a business. So for me, I was happy if people use Foreman. I really didn't care of making a profit out of it. I was really enjoying when other people were successful. So I didn't think for a minute to sell. I did kind of discuss with people, and again, back then, we didn't have a lot of startups that did open source, right? I mean, things change over the course of the last years, but back then I reached out to some friends at VPs or whatever, and they're like, yeah, you can make a business out of open source, but it really needs to be, but what's your core? What's the thing that, was questionable. And yes, okay, so Red Hat is one example of being successful. Who else, right? How many open source can be, for every 100 startups, maybe one is successful. So for how many open source projects can be a startup that can be successful, right? So the numbers are not looking good. And I was having fun. So I was like really looking for make a business out of it. And so when the opportunity came, and it came within Red Hat, because as the community became stronger in terms of, well, this substantial amount of contributors, substantial amount of users, there's a hype, excitement. It became apparent that we shouldn't fight against it, right? I mean, so yes, Red Hat did not plan for it. I mean, we created Catello. I think you meant you know it, right? And Catello was a standalone project that was that is still managing content for. It started as an RPM-based distributions. And then we said, okay, so Catello can use Foreman just like it uses Pulp, right? Pulp is the engine that does all of the RPM, so Catello can use Foreman to deploy. And that's how we started. And then realizing very quickly that, well, Catello will need to duplicate everything that is in Foreman, including all of its UI. So how about we make them side by side? Right. Yeah. And that way, that was an evolution of, oh, yes, you have Catello deployed and you have Foreman deployed one side by side. There's a single sign on between them. And whenever you, and you know, we created this hybrid menu, you could click on here, you go to Catello, click on there, you go to Foreman, and customers won't feel it. That wasn't a great experience either. and in the same process, a key component to, I think, Foreman's success was pluggability. So really building a way for others to contribute, and in a way that does not necessarily, I mean, we're both growing as a project. So the burden of maintenance, really, that every maintainer knows every line of code, that became very, not very challenging, not necessarily the lines of code, but the actual usage. So if I'm a developer and I don't have a VMware environment, how can I ensure that it works? I need to delegate it to someone. And then, okay, I have this special use case or specific need, then why shouldn't I block you? I mean, I want to encourage others to be successful, right? And create these mini communities that hopefully grows into something valuable by themselves. So we decided we're going to invest in pluggability. And that was, I think, 2012, or can't remember the exact date, but that was when it became apparent that there's going to be a limit how successful we'll be if we don't enable that. So once we enabled that, we toyed with the idea, well, can Catello be a plugin? And technically it was possible. And then we had internally at Red Hat a lot of conversations of, does it make sense? And so on. Well, And again, the good thing, Foreman had a community, and that's really what made a difference at the end of the day. And you know, Red Hat decided basically to make Foreman the upstream for their product, which is Satellite. So obviously, Satellite was opinionated. It was with Catello, not with, and Foreman technically started with Puppet, and then, oh, you had Puppet, and let me make it easy for you to add something on top. And initially, you see the, you know, the reporting and inventory, and then slowly you might add provisioning and other capabilities. And with Satellite, it was different. Oh, you want to manage RPM content, right? So that's a different starting point. That created a lot of friction, to be honest, because, well, the upstream didn't work that way, right? Upstream came from one path. Or when I say upstream, I mean the community. Sorry, we using some of the Red Hats. I mean, I think they're common now, but still, if there's anything that I'm, any terms that I'm using, please feel free to cut me off. So anyway, the entry path to Satellite was different. So we had a lot of installer bugs. We had a lot of issues. That created some friction and derailed a little bit the Catello integration. So it took another year, maybe more than we hoped, to be successful.
But it's always like that. If you want to integrate like multiple tools that have their own like history, have their own like languages that are written, and their own infrastructure, or architecture. Yeah. What drove adoption for me was really like the Foreman installer. There was a time where that didn't exist. and there it took me like, I don't know, 3 to 5 days to get a whole installation up and running with everything and the installer, and having that also everything defined there was so much easier. And I wouldn't miss the time when I installed it manually, because that led me to knowing the infrastructure much better than post installer. But that probably helps a lot into getting many people in the community started with that thing, right?
Well, I think it was a brilliant idea, and I don't remember who actually did it, but it was myself, probably someone else, to start maintaining Puppet reference modules for Foreman. It was really, you know, this is how I deployed it on my, you know, in my environment, right? I had my own playground server and I managed it with Puppet. So every time I find a bug, I fix my manifest. And the cool thing about it is that nearly everyone that came to the community knew Puppet. So how can you make it better? Oh, there's a Puppet base, right? So that was like an easy button, basically, to start contributing or even learning, right? This is something like, not everyone can read the code, not everyone can understand how JavaScript or web development work, or, you know, but if you're developing Puppet and that's why you came into this project to begin with, then sure, you could join, learn, contribute, improve, and feel part of the community. And yes, over time, we had really great people. And by the way, a lot of the team that managed Foreman at Red Hat were all, or many of them were users that joined the community and then hired by Red Hat, you know. So that was a great way to find the people that you want to be, you know, have on your team, right? So, I mean, you know, they're already contributing, you know, exactly, like all of them got in without interviews, basically, right? You already know them, right? I mean, there's no,
So you just got the people on your team that you already know. Totally makes sense. And I know that there has been a real long beta phase back then. So I've been a very long Red Hat Satellite 5.x user. So I'm one of those people coming from Spacewalk. I started back then, I think in 2010 or something like that. And one of the last projects that I did before I left my first job was migrating from Satellite 5.8 to 6.0. And that was a good lesson for me. I was really young back then, and I didn't know that you do not want to jump on a GA version once it came out.
Well, so. I think this is specifically, you know, the GA version was that combined, you know, integrated Catello and Foreman that had this rough, or I'll call it lack of mileage, right? When you have a entry path and you have lots of cars going at, there's no, you know, it's smooth at some point in time, right? So That didn't happen because, I mean, we had a really successful community project. Cotello was good as a standalone, you know, thing by itself. And then, you know, we combined them and like it worked. But, you know, that's exactly the friction that I think you felt. I think today, maybe I would do, I mean, obviously I would, might do things differently. but at the end of the day, I don't think that a GA version today necessarily is broken by design, right? I mean,
yeah, you're totally right, and it did work. So there was a documented migration path, and it worked pretty good. And with the following up minor versions, things got way better. So I remember when going to 6.1 and 6.2 and 6.3, it was pretty good. And there were a lot of performance enhancements to speed up the MongoDB database and so on. So it was totally fine. But I was just curious, do you know any details why the migration from Spacebook to Foreman and Catello was chosen? So was there any technical reason? I think maybe the missing modularity of further infrastructure.
I think, well, I don't know. I'm going to guess. I didn't make that decision. I was happy to be on the mostly focused on the upstream side of things, of less on the product per se. But one of the things that made it complicated is the fact that we called it the same thing. Satellite 5, Satellite 6.
Yes.
If it had a different name, people would not have the expectation that you could just move from one to the other. And I think, if I remember correctly, that we did try. The results that we got was not good in terms of, yes, it works, but do you know how to use the tool? Probably not. It's a different tool. It's really, you know, really, you need to understand how the tool works. So what the tool is capable. And if you just, I'll just move from one to the other, I don't know how successful. So I think there was both a combination of customers not being that successful with just migrating. You know, this Puppet, there's nothing like that on the other side.
Yes.
Or just different mentality or a different way of grouping or different way of managing infrastructure. I think that was I don't think we could have done something that will set the right expectations and make customers successful. So yes, it's more painful. I totally agree. But maybe the mistake, I mean, I don't know if it's a mistake or not a mistake. The fact you all as Red Hat customers, you end up using Satellite is probably because you had Satellite before. And if we would call it something else, let's say the awesome whatever management tool, I don't know if you would use it, right? So. Yeah. I can't say that Red Hat made the wrong decision, but yes, it made it a little bit bumpier than it should be.
I mean, they had also adoption had to be to take place because you changed that from. I mean, the Spacebook project was capable of shipping out like config files. It shipped them, and then it was done. Changing to Puppet, I don't know how many times I had to tell people that deactivating the agent is not the right way if they get a file change that they change manually, and that they should. Yeah. Please stop changing files manually if you want to maintain something at a larger scale. So I don't know how else this should come. I mean, with a CD and a guy or someone coming there and telling them, okay, let's get straight back to that change project and tell us how things are supposed to be. So that you don't think that the tool messes everything up because it's you using it like the wrong way.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's spot on. And if you think about the migration in that example, a migration tool might, all these files, I'll create a Puppet manifest for them and I'll put them. But I think it's like code. If it's automatically generated in this context, you don't really understand what's doing what. And it's not a complete solution. I mean, if it makes you, I don't care, it just works, then okay, you might not need to go into that resolution and figure out how it works. But in most cases, you actually need to understand what exactly is doing. And so it's not the right level of abstraction. So it wasn't that useful.
And it's like if you have a hammer that everything you have in your hands looks like a nail. So
and also think about it, it's the early days of GitOps.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, totally. That is a big change to ClickOps or whatever, ScriptOps.
Nowadays, I get beaten for saying that this already was GitOps because people are thinking that now with Kubernetes it's a bit different. It is, but I mean, it was really the starting point of it.
Let's give you a few Kubernetes versus Puppet. So first of all, I think Kubernetes was very much influenced by Puppet. First of all, in terms of whether it was by design or just by you had Puppet and Chef as influencers back then.
At the end of the day, thinking about having a desired state is something that you had back in the day.
Exactly. That was the Puppet value, right? As you define the state, you test the state, that is the desired outcome, and you write code to achieve it. Whether it's YAML or whether it's something else, doesn't matter. And the main difference between Puppet and Kubernetes at the end of the day, I guess, was Puppet was focused on systems and took 30 days on average to implement a change. And Kubernetes is a lot faster and can do it in a multi-node fashion. Or, you're not talking about systems that much unless you really care about systems or hosts or nodes in Kubernetes. So from that point, I mean, Kubernetes, in my opinion, is just a better Puppet in that context.
That's great statement.
Yeah, I mean, Kubernetes is 10 years old now, right? I mean, or over 10.
Already.
So, so we need something else now.
I heard WebAssembly is like the next thing to hop onto.
Can it do AI and work on
web ASM.ai?
We've been on a lot of conferences lately, and it's like 2 years, and every conference sounds like kind of the same. I don't know, but let's see.
AI twice by now, so we're good.
We were just joking a couple of weeks ago. We were like, okay, so the next version of Red Hat Satellite 6.16 or 7.x should have AI and a GPT interface. So, hey, please patch my systems to fix CVE. So
probably not GPT, just saying. because really, if we think about open source like and GPT, that's a big conflict.
Yeah, I mean, true.
And that's really intriguing, and it's part of what I'm doing these days. But this is really intriguing to think of. If you think about AI today, and I'm sorry if we derailed, can feel free to cut it in editing, right? but effectively, I think AI today is a much like, predates the days of Linux. So you had all kinds of vendors, each one is creating solutions. It's a hardware and software combination. You know, think about Sun or HP Wix or all kind of things had back then. And everyone was creating their own. And if you think about OpenAI or XAI or Meta or whoever, basically that Google and everyone else creating their own models, they're creating their own unique solutions. And the main thing is you don't know how it was trained. Right. So you don't know what fits into that machine. You don't know whether you can count that content, right? If it spits code, is it copyrighted or not? Can you use it or not? If the idea so I really hope that we'll have a community like the kernel that will lead into models that people can improve and train and fine tune in the AI terms. So that is really commodity. And we all benefit from that. And therefore, companies can build their own solutions on top. Just like no one would imagine to build a new kernel for hardware today, you're just adding something, just these lines for the kernel for the driver and everything else integrates. So I hope that in a few years, that's how AI would look like.
And I mean, it was the big announcement of this year's Red Hat Summit, the Instruct Lab project, which is basically the core of that. And Enrico has a Instruct Lab sticker on his phone, so we already covered that. That's a quite interesting technology, I think a great approach of delivering AI-enabled applications without the usual vendor lock-in thing. So, and I know we have things like OpenShift AI, we have RHEL AI, so satellite AI should be the next thing, right?
Well, I think it is. I mean, and again, this is my I'm not an AI expert by all means. I'm newbie like everyone else, I assume.
Yeah.
But I think this is like, you know, if we were a little bit older in 1982, where PCs were introduced, right? Think about the world before PCs. IBM introduced a PC back then, I think. I was a child. 3 years old, basically. But at that point in time, I think there was like the life before PCs and the life after PC. Same goes for internet, right? We had the life before internet and the life after internet. So maybe NVIDIA is the IBM of that time, right? And the main difference, in my opinion, that, you know, it took us like 30, 40 years to get from that early days of PCs to where we are today with AI will just take 3 to 5 years. Because we have all the other stuff already going. So it is going to be like before and after. Whether satellite includes it, I think everyone's asking themselves, okay, every company in the world, basically, not just software companies, are asking, okay, how do I use this AI stuff, right? Exciting times.
So that also brings me to the question. I mean, you have been like fairly active in the early days of Foreman, and then it kind of decreased, probably because you had other things to do, a team to lead, and making sure that between the travels around the conferences to onboard people and get them started, probably. So what happened in that period of time, and what are you doing like nowadays?
Okay. So after 7 years working on Foreman, I had this, I don't know, midlife crisis. and I asked myself, okay, you're having fun. It's great. I'm already, qualified to this maintainer status and the father of the community or whatever you want to call it. Okay, now what, right? Do you want to do Foreman for another 7 years? And I realized, even though it wasn't really against my instinct or my passion, and you know, there's always mixed feeling whether the timing was wrong. I did decide, I had this opportunity as well, and I made a decision that I will try to see if I can, I don't know if replicate, but you know, I've been successful doing this. Can I be successful doing something else as well? And that's the time where I started moving away from the satellite engineering team. By the way, back then, I was already a manager at Red Hat. So one of the experiences I had when I became a maintainer on the Foreman community was, well, I'm not writing code anymore. I'm always only telling people what they can or cannot do. Why don't I make it more official? And yes, I'm going to be manager/maintainer and help still help the team to be successful, right? So focus more on the team that runs it and you know, help it grow this way. So I can't remember when I did the transition, but this was already a few good years into my managerial career at Red Hat. And at that point, I said, well, can I lead another team? Can I do, you know, other impactful team things? And not that Foreman or satellite were not impactful. I think they're still, you know, driving significant revenue and very successful for Red Hat. So I stepped out of my comfort zone and started experimenting. I learned more to manage, different UI teams or learn to, you know, different realms. So, for example, again, within Red Hat, it was mostly on the infrastructure sides of things, right? But, can we manage a hyperconverged systems? Can we move to the edge and start, managing things in hundreds, thousands and more and with constraints like real time or sizing, all kinds of different projects that I end up doing over the years. And turns out I was pretty successful being able to move from one project to another. And I ended up leading a team that specialized in special projects. So I have a team of a few hundreds engineers that within Red Hat, we call ourselves the ecosystem engineering group, which is, pretty much that buffer between our products and the things we need to solve tomorrow, or things that happens to, you know, whether we want to focus on industries or, you know, specific verticals or specific technologies like AI. So my team basically jumps on new things. We try to figure out what, you know, what should we do with them? How do we integrate them into our projects? And there's lots of these kind of engagements. So it keeps us busy and excited and always doing the, you know, latest and greatest. Still having fun. So I can't say it's the same, right? I'm no longer someone who knows everything on that project. It's much more wide in that context. It has, you know, pros and cons. And yeah, every now and then I still miss Sormant and you know, Git pull the latest changes and look at the community Discord or, you know, things like that.
So do you still use Sormant from time to time or Catello?
Sadly, no. I mean, I maintained an environment for many years. I ran a lab also within Red Hat, and I think at some point in time we had no one dared to touch my hardware for many years, but at some point in time it grew and you know, became obsolete. I realized I'm the only one. It was my environment, no one was touching it, so everyone already had something else. So at that point in time, we just dismantled the lab, I think, at that, you know, and I didn't create a new one. Every now and then, I think I had when I learned about containers, then, you know, I took the exercise to Dockerize Sormant. Sadly, that didn't catch. But I got it to run Kubernetes, got it to run as on, Docker and Podman. But the plugin actually architecture was not great fit for containers. But all in all, I don't want it today, sadly.
That must be hard after starting this all these years ago. But yeah, you've got new tasks to cover, new opportunities, and sometimes you need to focus on other things.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's still fun to join. And if you give me a bug, it will take me a couple of hours, but I could fix it. So I don't feel like it's changed that much since I left it. I mean, in a positive way, right? Not in a negative way. So it's still, I think I am one of the steps in growing up is also to let go, right? And I felt like I've done that successfully.
Wise words. So is there any favorite plugin that you love to use back then or that you still have a look at sometimes?
I don't know if it's favorite plugin, maybe back then it was the compute profiles before they get, but we created it. If you look at the code, I think compute profiles were abstracted, maybe like plugins. So, I mean, now they could be plugins as well, but in the beginning, that was the first steps, I think, towards plugins. So first we created the compute providers and then created plugins, if I remember correctly. This was where it was awesome. So for example, I never had a real vSphere environment to work with. I knew vSphere was very popular. I told you guys that I came to a KVM organization, right? So
yeah.
I was using Libvirt and KVM and, you know, all that. That was very natural. I needed something, I would, you know, go across the desk and talk to the whoever, this maintainer or that maintainer. That was very, very easy. So having the community started contributing, you know, so that building something and then seeing it grow and seeing more people, I mean, that was like amazing every time from the beginning, you know, from the first contribution that I remember, the first person contributing, actually providing a patch, which, oh my God, where did that came from? It was someone running Sormant on a Solaris environment or something like that.
Oh, really?
You know, okay. We had Puppet. Puppet would run on Solaris. Yeah. And, you know,
oh, wow.
And like, yeah. And we're like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And Yeah, and it just kept on going. So, I mean, the first patch was definitely a big thing. And every time someone did something, you know, significant, like open up for a whole kind of realm of, you know, possibilities, that was very exciting.
I mean, Compute Profiles solved like lots of things in documentation and standardization while creating things.
It was a total game changer for me back then. So
yeah.
We had VMware vSphere, and we had we wanted to ensure that people are not doing dumb things. Yeah, so there are a lot of buttons to press when provisioning in vSphere VM, and the same applies mm-hmm. to KVM, Hyper-V, you name it.
Sure.
So having Compute Profiles and having all the necessary things preset made things so much easier.
Yeah, I think the challenge, maybe, you know, thinking about it, is that we didn't do a good separation sometimes between you know, the properties and the parameters of the runtime. You know, maybe today I would think about it slightly differently, or at least try. I don't know if we would be more successful, but so that kind of blurred, you know, also host groups where maybe too many things. Yeah. And so, you know, you have to remember there was no architecture and a console or whatever group of people coming together to build this. So it was just like someone writing code, someone else commenting, someone improving all the time. Very different, I think, than how we do software today, maybe.
But I think that was probably because you're capable of having this like as a community project and not have to focus too much on companies using it back in the early days. And I mm-hmm. think that would have been completely different if you had to, or if you have chosen to launch a company, build a startup, and then grow with your first sure. two or three customers. That project would probably have not grown in so many directions if you would have followed that path. So I totally love it that it was like the open project, and you just found someone that was willing to pay you for this thing, and that you could work on it. And later, Red Hat probably also I mean, they had a reason why they employed you. You had a good idea, you had a good tool, lots of people liking it and working on it. So it had to be monetized some way, but that was not your main point. And I like that a lot, and I think that helped the project to grow in that many directions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not every idea was successful, obviously. Like, we had a lot of, you know, we had the Foreman Docker plugin, which was,
yeah.
I think...
Oh, I know.
I remember that one.
I used it sometime, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, same here.
Well, yeah, and then, okay, now what, kind of, right? It wasn't that great, even though it was a, you know, buzzword, so everyone was, you know, excited about it. We had the Foreman Snapshot plugin, which I don't know if you knew, but it was something that you could create images, you know, build machines, mm-hmm. and it will snapshot them. And then you can, the next time you deploy, you'll do it on the based on the snapshot. Sadly, that didn't. I still don't understand why, but that didn't end up being useful. Not everything was that green, but or that great, but.
There were so many plugins where only a few people worked on. I remember that I've been working in an environment where we had lots of Xen servers, and it was like mm-hmm. Two or three people out there using it. And even I think there was a change that I at some point introduced, and no one was even capable of reproducing this because no one had a Xen server environment and stuff like that. So, but that was also like you could be a part of that community so easily. Just say, okay, I have an environment, I can test it, it works, we can have a session together, and then we got things done. If I had to choose my favorite plugin, I totally love the Hooks plugin, because that enables you so easily to integrate that into whatever environment, because you just had to create a bunch of shell scripts and do your magic in there. That helped a lot.
That's a pretty good one, yeah. And I think it's still going strong, so I know that it's still maintained by a lot of people. And I know Evgeny Golov, which we had on the previous episode where we were talking about the Foreman highlights in German, he also shared Well, we also shared that plugin, so that's still going strong. So that's a good example of plugins that made their way and are still with it, I think.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't end up being back in the core, kind of. why is it still a plugin?
Yeah. Right?
But yeah. Definitely.
Well, it always depends on your use case. So I know the most installation that I stumble upon have Foreman and Catello, but I hear that there is also a need of just Foreman without any Catello. So I think that's also the reason why Catello is not part of the core.
Well, I think the main reason Catello was not part of the core probably is because of the heavy components Catello brings. So if I remember correctly, or at least maybe, I don't know if that changed, but Catello had pulp and had Candlepin and had now only Postgres. There was a point in time where you had Mongo as well. So that's by definition a much bigger stack of components. It requires different hardware or different, you know, virtualization environment and a lot more moving pieces. So with that, I think that makes sense that it's not. Maybe it's, you know, that's something you can flip off, even if it's, you know, on by default. You don't have to run it like that.
Yeah.
And in the early days where the Scatello only supported RPMs, I think, you know, big part of the community was Debian as well, or, you know, Ubuntu or Debian. And so that was irrelevant for, I think, a few good years until we got the, you know, the first contributions to enable that, which was awesome, by the way. Like, to see on both sides, both that people contributed and that Red Hat was happy to include non-RPMs in the project. So
definitely, yeah, it was a big game changer for my home lag back then because I was still running Spacewalk, and then it got superseded and I was looking for a successor, and then I saw, hey, there's this pulp depth thing and it will be part of Catello. And I was happy to test it, and it worked pretty good for me. So maybe one question that I still have in my mind, is there a story behind the name? I know that they are all related to work utility. So we have the Hammer CLI. We have things like Nailgun and Airgun and Foreman and Catello. Also, I think we have a scheme here. So is there a story behind it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, first of all, Catello, pulp, and Candlepin are a different family, right? They're, I mean, relatives, but Candlepin, you know, it's like a bowling Candlepin, and Catello, yeah, I mean, did not make come from the same origins. Maybe this is a marriage, right? Foreman actually started as the Torque. If you go and look in the really early commits, like on the first 10, probably see a rename of the project. You know, I had it ready. I mean, one of the things, surprisingly, finding a project name, registering a DNS for it.
Yeah.
Not easy. Not an easy task. No. So I looked, and Torque sounds right because, you know, there's strength and there is some, you know, physics that I connect to, and there's like, you know, awesomeness. I registered the domain and everything and started calling it like that. And I think in a week or two after I launched it, right, put it in the internet, right, put it on GitHub. Someone said, well, there's this Ruby project that runs, spawns Ruby web servers called Torque or TorqueBox, something like that. Like, don't you find it confusing? And so, I didn't know that exists. And oops, okay, I'll go back and, you know, then someone said, and that was already, we already had a small community, just, also, important statement on how the small community was created. So the most important lesson I learned is that you need something to jump from, right? If you're jumping from very low, then yeah, you probably won't get there. So the first thing I did was to go to the Puppet community and basically say, hey, I have this tool. Maybe you'll be interested. And even like 2% out of those folks would be interested. That's what's seeded, right? The first step. So back then, already after a few weeks, a couple of weeks, we had people that were interested. And then the community came up with the name. So someone said, what about Foreman? You know, he's the person in the construction that manages everything. Mm-hmm. So why not? I said, no, I didn't know that term. Thank you for educating me about a language, you know, something in English. And yeah, I like it a lot. And the surprising part is, like, I think a couple of years later, someone created another Foreman project that was spawning processes. I don't know if you knew that. But if you Google Ruby Foreman something, maybe it's archived by now, but it's another project that was very popular to run web servers. You know, it would spawn multiple, you know, you would start your Nginx and, you know, whatever process for your web server, maybe a small database or a small key value server. I don't know, something, spawn things together, right? Just like Podman Compose maybe starts, or Docker Compose starts multiple containers together. So everyone was coming to Foreman and joining the IRC and like asking questions about the other Foreman. Like, didn't I just rename my project so people won't know? You know, like, how come we got back to this point, right? So
surprise.
Anyway, I'm happy our Foreman survived that, and you know, so it's the Foreman, right?
Definitely. And also people in our personal community are interested in this topic. So we ask our community whether there are some questions they have in your mind that they would like us to get answered by you. So we've collected five questions, and I think we maybe should end our interview with those questions. So the first thing, sure, maybe an easy one, why did you decide to go for Ruby or Ruby on Rails back then in the first place? So was it the best tool to go for back then, or was there any particular reason?
Because you've been working with Puppet, right?
Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
So when I started Foreman, I wasn't, you know, great software developer. I was just, you know, someone that grew from the IT. I mean, I knew how to write software, but, you know, so I started learning about Ruby. I mean, I wrote Ruby before, a scripting language, and you know, learning more about Puppet. I think I had my first PR or something into Puppet or Facts or Factor or something like that. And I liked it. It was a nice experience. And then I learned about Active Record, which is the gem in Ruby, which does the database abstraction. And back then, I think there was store configs or something like that for Puppet. So one of the features of Puppet, of Foreman, is that if you had Puppet with store configs, we could immediately show you your inventory. You don't need to configure anything. That was one of the, I think, easy buttons to get value. You don't have to do anything. You just connect it to the database. All of a sudden, you see this web UI. So, that was just like an easy, when I was trading off between, okay, you know, writing in Python or writing in any other language versus having very quick value for users and easy to, you know, to develop, I guess. Now there's other options, right? I mean, but Ruby sounded like a reasonable, you know, it's still a niche language. I still like the language as a language. I know it was not as popular, is not as popular as others like Python or Rust or whatever, Go, etc. But it's still a valuable license, language. And yeah, so it just worked, I guess.
Why not? So the next one, I think that's easier to answer. So Foreman started as an external node classifier for Puppet. Over the years, it has developed to much more, and the Puppet integration does not get so much love anymore, as Red Hat seems to focus more on Red Hat and Ansible instead. Are you sad that the project has gone into this direction? Would you wish that the Puppet support would again receive similar support as Ansible?
So when you ask about being sad or not, I think the thing that made me happy was that people found it valuable. So if that's still something that is valuable, and I don't know, right? I think you guys are more connected than I am in this context, but it does feel that over the years, and definitely since the acquisition of Puppet, things might have changed. So I like the fact that it was not limited to Puppet, right? And I think a lot of the pop, there's a lot of Puppet influence into the early days of Foreman and how things are structured. And I'm happy a lot, many of these things did find themselves to be relevant with other, you know, Salt and Ansible and other things that we had over the years. So from that context, I'm not sad as long as it's, I'm assuming, please correct me if I'm not wrong, that, you know, we moved Puppet to become a plugin and people that want to use Puppet can still use Puppet. I don't know. I didn't, honestly did not try Puppet for many years now. So maybe things changed. But I hope, or yes, I know that the people that get paid by Red Hat probably will do what's better for Red Hat, but definitely will not block anything that is good for the community. So if there was a demand or desire, and I know that many of the folks are really great folks today that are still in the team, care about Puppet. They made their career also partly because of that. I don't think it's, you know, keep me honest and I could check it up, but I would assume that if people still find value in the Puppet integration, Foreman should still be useful.
I mean, sure. It's probably the same thing that we talked before. The direction that a tool goes, if it at the same time has to be a company and has to bring value and pay people and stuff like that. I think Puppet really had a struggle to move from systems management to application management and all that mm-hmm. changes in their own management and being acquired by, I think it was Perforce the last time they got acquired and stuff. So I think that also limits the amount of creativity that you can have and sadly, it has never become the tool to manage applications. It was a systems management tool. Is it up until today? But it didn't make that jump into the next direction, and that is where others came in or are better at. I mean, Ansible is a lot better at managing like different stages of applications and having things in a different order or workflow or stuff like that. That's something that with Puppet was still possible but didn't feel right.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. And if you experience Kubernetes and actually write containers and whatever, Helm charts or other YAML, it feels different, right? It feels like it's the right tool for the job. And I did experiment. I actually, I don't know what triggered me. I don't know if you guys know, in Fedora, there's a website called Fedora People, which is basically free hosting, right? Every contributor to open source projects, including Fedora, gets like a account. Once you have an account, you have actually a homepage and you can create a public HTML and you could put stuff on it. And I end up looking like, and I got a message about the servers moving and asking whether, you know, I still need my account or my disk space or whatever. So I logged in and I found a video put from 2013 about an initiative. I tried to create a new app called Stacker, which was supposed to create stacks of software, right? Mm-hmm. Components like, you would have like a provisioning layer, you'd have like a system definition layer, a standard operating environment. And then on top of it, you'll have your application. And you could mix and use Foreman to, you know, and you could deploy many of these and they could cross communicate, like a database and password could know about each other and, and you know, configure firewalls or, you know, the credentials to connect to the database. And all of that was been implemented with Puppet. And I looked at it. It looks like this is awesome. But yeah, I'm happy that was not successful because, you know, going a few steps forward, was not the right tool for the job. So, and I think Foreman had the same problem, by the way. Where do you stop? Where is the line that you should say, no more? This is wrong. This shouldn't be done by this tool.
Yeah, especially as the integrations with cloud providers increase. I mean, you had EC2 and virtual machines, but what now? Do we manage the whole catalog of a cloud provider? Are we there was CloudForms also. Is Foreman the new CloudForms? Is CloudForms becoming a plugin? How does that all work together?
Yeah. We did, by the way, experiment at some point in time. Does it make sense to combine them?
Yeah, I know. To have CloudForms as a foreman of foremans, basically.
Oh, wow.
Well, we actually had a POC where CloudForms was a plugin of foreman. Management space is very challenging, right? When you build a tool, usually, it's supposed to be doing something. When you go to management, is how people interact with those systems. You need to build a few management systems before you know what you're doing, I guess, or to answer those questions, right? So it's hard to know. And especially with open source, if someone finds it useful, why should I block it? I mean, the only question is about burden of maintainability. If you go away, if you disappear, if you contributed something and you disappear, do I think I can take the responsibility for it, right?
Hmm. So. Definitely.
But that's the question that we had going through our minds, where we, accepting new features or not.
That's an important
balance
one.
between value to the community to can I actually take it on?
So the next question is also quite interesting, and I think you already answered that in parts. It is, how did it came that Red Hat decided to go for Foreman and Catello instead of Spacewalk for the Satellite 6 bases?
So Spacewalks was end of life in terms of scale, and also was, as we talked about, adapting to the new world of system management, right? If you think about, we had a big shift, I guess, from the early 2000s to the 2010 to 2020, I guess. So there was a decision that we're moving off to a new, more modernized code base. That was a decision that predates, I think, even me coming to Red Hat. Catello was supposed to be, I think it was called Tana, whatever. We had a different code name for it back then. Was supposed to be the foundation for that replacement. And as we discussed, Foreman, they use Cobbler, and I was like, well, Cobbler is awesome. I have Michael Dahan, amazing, especially with Ansible. Kudos to him. I have this foreman here. I'm in the maintainer. I'm in the same team that needs to build this solution and integrate Cobbler. What do you guys think about me doing a POC if it works with foreman, right? So that's how it started. And my manager was like, yeah, why not? And that started, I guess, that journey.
Interesting. The next one, I don't know whether we can find an answer for that, but the question is, Foreman seems to become a heavyweight software, at least since the Catello integration. Do you have any clue what might be the reason for this and how to fix it? I think we do not have Oracle glasses to answer that, but what's your take on this?
No, I mean, first of all, as we said, history has some, how things started and the integration, right? So Pulp, Candlepin. So I think there's big improvement that move away from Mongo.
Oh, yes.
Right when Pulp was started, we need Mongo. It's going to be large scale. We have to have something like Mongo, right? And then Postgres can actually do this quite well. So that was a big thing. And obviously Python, Pulp, Candlepins, Java, Catello, and Foreman, Ruby also doesn't help, to have and I think also the lack of ability to spawn off microservices in a way, not necessarily microservice per se, but one of the reasons I tried, not successfully, for good reasons, I think, but still was hoping that we could start to containerize a little bit parts of Foreman, was to be able to run parts of Foreman in different scale. So let's say a process takes, a gigs of RAM, probably it's more today, but And the same process handles the whatever reports, the facts, the provisioning, the whatever, the UI. Same process does the same thing, but technically different things happen at a different cadence, right? So machines will upload facts and reports, depending on how many machines you have, right? And maybe certain, I don't know, requests like to sign a certificate only happens when you're provisioning. So if we could say, you know, let's take this part out of Foreman core or as a process and run, let's say, a smaller fact importer process, and we can run tens of it, then we can actually have on the same hardware, we could probably be a lot more effective in handling a lot more clients without impacting the UI or other APIs. I think to build that infrastructure without Kubernetes or without something like Kubernetes requires a lot of effort. You're building lots of capabilities of, you know, launching processes, maintaining their scalability, a lot of things that Kubernetes just make it work, don't exist in Foreman and Satellite. So I'm hoping, and I recommended my friends at Red Hat, to think about, you know, a version of Satellite where it's a VM appliance basically that runs whether in a Kubernetes or something, you know, small scale Kubernetes that can just use Kubernetes to tune and run different components versus run the whole thing. And then they could automatically scale and they could even start running Foreman as a VM. Again, that would require bare metal, but wrap it in a Kubernetes environment and have those integrations. So anyway, I think it's a balance of not disrupting the community too much, right? To starting from scratch and having maybe the Satellite 5 to Satellite 6 experiences again.
But coming back to MongoDB, so things are so much better since it has been migrated to being part of the PostgreSQL database. So I remember running one of the first versions of Satellite 6.x and when we did the patch release. So once a month, I was releasing new patches and our storage admin came to me, "Christian, what the hell are you doing on that machine?" And I was like, "Releasing patches? Why are you asking?" "Yeah, because it does even more IOPS than our ERP system that is productive in 20 plus countries in the world." And I was like, "Oh, oops, I didn't know that. Sorry, I'm doing this in the evening. Okay, yes, go ahead." And I think in the next releases, there were a lot of performance enhancements and it went way better. But now, without having the need of the MongoDB and releasing patches only takes, like, I think something around 20 seconds. That's such a great experience that it only takes a couple of seconds. And I'm happy every time I release new patches because I know how bad it was back then and how great it became. Yeah. So thanks a lot for all that kind of...
I can't take any credit for that, to be honest. The only thing that maybe I can take some credit is that I started writing a Foreman Pulp plugin at some point in time when we didn't know whether Catello or not Catello. And it did had similar, you know, it was simple mirroring versus, you know, more advanced workflows. But maybe that helped along the way to... enable those simple use cases or fast use cases anyway. So yes, I know what the pain you're referring to. I can remember some really painful escalations we had internally about customers that were really not successful even upgrading their Satellite server. That was a big pain for us, I think, as well at some point. I don't know whether it was luck or stupidity, but I always kind of, I'm the Foreman maintainer. I'm the, you know, working on the community with the community, less on the Satellite itself. So for good or bad, I dodged that part, I guess, but yeah, can't take credit for any of its success though. So
the last question is from our community regarding a new tool which is called Tinkerbell. And I think Enrico nerd-sniped me into this. So that looks a bit like modern Foreman on steroids. Did you ever heard about this? Is this a thing you're aware of?
As far as I remember, Tinkerbell was created in Equinix back in the days. And I think it's probably the similar rationale for me having Foreman or building Foreman in the first place. You have a problem, you have an itch, and you need to solve it. So I never tried it or used it. But I'm happy. I mean, so first of all, for good or bad, I'm happy that the bar of solving this problem is high. So that means that we successfully moved from doing manual work to, you know, having concepts and flows like GitOps to automation and self-service and all of these things that we went through in, you know, probably in many of our careers to have great tools that solve problems and we can focus on things that matter. So I'm happy that, you know, this space is still receiving attention because, surprise, you know, machines are still needed to run. Computers are still needed. And whether you use a cloud or whether you run them yourself or run in or most likely in a hybrid world, that's still a problem. Tinkerbell's is the way of the future. That sounds great. Maybe they did a better job. I don't know who the comment came from in terms of Foreman on steroids. Maybe, you know, it's always good to learn from others and what to do and what not to do. So I'm happy, you know, people still have choice, right? So
definitely. Well, Ohad, thanks a lot for all the great topics we were talking about. So all the little but very interesting stories you were able to share with us. Are there any wishes for the future of the Foreman project or anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. You know, it is nice to be able to celebrate successes together. I wish for another 15 years for Foreman and that it's still useful for people, right? That it's evolved as needed and that people still are passionate by it. So I also wish for the community, for the project to really be able to change with, you know, as the other changes are happening in our worlds, to adapt to the change and be successful. I feel like I'm lucky, you know, to experience the first revolution, let's say, where we moved to really computers everywhere dominating the world, to maybe experiencing AI now, which will maybe dominate our world. So I feel lucky to live both, you know, revolutions. And thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure having you on the show. What about you, Enrico? Do you have any wishes for the future of the Foreman project?
Well, I think I have the same experience that Ohad has. I moved on to containers and don't care much about operating systems anymore. There are controllers that do this nowadays. And I kind of miss those times where I could just tinker around on the tiny parts of the systems. But think there is much more work to be done on the application side of things. And for me, it's a great thing to help people get to new architectures, make their applications scalable, and move on from monolithic systems to microservices and things like that. So I'm more on that part of the story right now, and I've been stalking I've been going through the contributors list, and people like Dominic or Daniel or something, they all moved on to different topics, many of them to DevOps or AI nowadays. So I wish that it's the base for the task that it does. I think at some point you can call it done and say that it's doing a great job. It's working. There is not much more coming into it, and you're moving on to a different layer. And I hope that everyone has a choice to do this and be successful in all the different aspects of IT, basically, right?
So as I'm the legacy guy in this round, so I'm not doing a lot of container related things. I'm doing more, let's say, the basis layer of IT infrastructure these days, which still is things like Formian and Catello. So I'm using it on a daily basis, and I really like and appreciate the way it has come in the last 15 years. So it started and it had a lot of movement, and it became way more stable and usable, and it works pretty good for me and also my customers, and I hope that it will stay strong at least for the next 15 years. There isn't anything that I'm missing per se. I would say maybe things like having a dark mode, but Evgeny also nerd sniped me into that there's an Formian Catello theme repository available on GitHub, and I should go ahead, fork it, and do it on my own. So maybe I will do that. And besides this, it works pretty good for me, and I hope that it stays this way.
Awesome.
So thanks a lot. It was a pleasure talking to you guys. And I hope that we maybe can continue this in 15 years or so.
Awesome.
Okay. Well then, dear listener, thanks a lot for listening. In case you have any feedback, please go ahead and drop us a mail at podcast@sva.de. Enrico, go ahead. Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure with you. And I hope that you will have a nice evening.
Thanks. Have a nice one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.